You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Darkness at the break of noon, shadows, even the silver spoon, the handmade blade, the child's balloon, eclipses both the sun and moon. To understand, you know too soon, there's no sense in trying.
A living symbol of the shameful historical legacy of American exploitation, domination, and abandonment of Native Americans can be found on the Lakota Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota.
Historically, Shannon County, which is where the reservation is located in southwestern South Dakota, has been one of the poorest counties in the country, ranking everywhere between 1 and 5 consistently for decades. And the tribe has been looking for alternative ways of raising revenue, of creating jobs.
That's Brandon Ekafee, managing editor of Native Sun News. He's a member of the Oglala Lakota tribe. And he's talking about conditions that have motivated the tribe to think about legalizing marijuana as a possible boost to the local economy in the same way that tribes have benefited from legalized gambling.
In the past, there's always been a kind of a generational divide on marijuana between younger Americans and older Americans. Well, on the reservation, that divide doesn't seem to exist. I think a community that's been hit so hard by mass incarceration, by poverty, by a number of social afflictions, finding something that might work is appealing to everybody.
Around the country, at least 24 other tribes are considering similar proposals. Newsweek correspondent Ian McDougall has explored the implications of these possible changes. Joins us now. Ian, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So what would happen if, from coast to coast, reservations actually adopted this?
The first issue would be that marijuana would remain illegal under federal law, under the Controlled Substances Act. And the federal government, in the case of states like Colorado and Washington, has said, while it remains illegal, we will not prosecute as long as you find ways to regulate this carefully, make sure kids don't get access to it, make sure it doesn't go to states where it's illegal. The tribes presumably would be subject to the same kind of requirements in order for the Justice Department not to prosecute under federal law. Which would mean they would have to set up, as Colorado and Washington have, very elaborate regulatory and enforcement regimes. And it's not clear that even if that happens, the federal government would give them the same courtesy, I guess, because in this memorandum, interestingly, it's not – tribes aren't mentioned. Only state and local governments are mentioned. People often talk about the U.S. as a place of dual sovereignty, states and federal, but they forget it's triple sovereignty. Really.
Triple sovereignty,
tribes,
right,
as well.
Exactly. In Colorado and Washington State, where marijuana is already legalized to a certain extent, what would be the status there? They'd be able to sell tax-free or outside the regulatory regime within those legalized states?
That becomes a complicated question. In Colorado, as in South Dakota, the tribes, the reservations are totally separate, and they would – so even though you legalize it in Colorado, it's not legalized on the reservation in Colorado. About half of the reservations or so are in states governed by this complicated statute that was came about in, I think, the 50s, where there's sort of this concurrent state tribal jurisdiction when it comes to criminal matters. So Washington is dealing with that now. Some of the reservations there are saying, we don't want marijuana to be legal on our reservation, but they are partly under state criminal jurisdiction. So it becomes this difficult question, but in most states that would be the case.
Economically, is there any way to measure what the possible benefit would be at a place like Pine Ridge in South Dakota?
It's hard to say. I mean, for something like Colorado, it's been tremendous. In January and February, I think it was something like $6 million in tax revenue in Colorado alone. What people who have studied this a little bit or thought about it have said to me is that you have kind of a Scylla and Charybdis situation where on one hand, in order for it to be profitable to get kind of scale, you'd need to really make serious revenue. You'd have to have a fairly sort of open, a lot of people coming in, fairly easy to get access to it. But on the other hand, if you do that, you run the risk of federal enforcement.
Right. So you couldn't on Pine Ridge create, Potorama, the drive-in mall that you could, just hit on Route 80 there.
In theory, I guess you could, but yeah, the problem would be you'd have to have some way of preventing people from coming in, buying it, and then moving on. And for an area three times the size of Rhode Island, there are only, I think, 51 tribal police officers. And in January, they had to ask the BIA, the federal government, to come in and help them because they had too few police officers on the reservation.
Is the legalization of gambling on reservations a decent model for anticipating how this would work if it were actually implemented?
It is, in the sense that it's something that would be, in theory, grown. Everything would be created on the reservation. So unlike cigarettes, tax-free cigarettes, which have been more problematic because they have to be brought in from elsewhere, it is analogous. The other thing is you'd run into the same problem. So Pine Ridge, for example, has a casino, Prairie Wind, that has had a hard time really generating a lot of revenue, unlike reservations near, say, Phoenix or near here in Connecticut, where you're near big areas, major highways. When you're on a reservation, as many of them are in the middle of nowhere, it's hard to really get a lot of people to come there.
Is there controversy within the tribes about doing this, whether it's a good idea or not?
Absolutely. I mean, that's people have told me that there's a lot of concern, these two dozen or so, maybe more, tribes that are thinking about this. There's a lot of fear of the feds cracking down and them making an example of whichever tribe decides to pull the trigger first on this.
And would Pine Ridge possibly be first in line?
It could be. It seems like the proposal right now is stalled. It's not clear exactly where it's going to go. They're still pushing for it, but there, I think, a lot of pushback has come from this fear of what will happen if they do this.
I'm wondering if the political orders in various states are inclined to wait and see, because certainly states outside the reservations have benefited from the economic development, particularly you cited Connecticut there, of the growth of casinos. Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods in Connecticut have benefited businesses inside and outside the reservation.
That's certainly a possibility. I think, on the other hand, there's a great deal of wariness about this diversion issue, both, at least for Pine Ridge, both Nebraska and South Dakota, which the reservation borders, have not legalized marijuana at all. So I think there's a countervailing concern there.
Ian McDougall is a correspondent for Newsweek looking at the implications of the legalization of marijuana on Native American reservations around the U.S. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.